started then to Rabbi Yanky Wiesenfeld.
Good morning, Rabbosai, and it's good to be back in Manchester again, giving another shiur, Kanai and Horror, all these familiar faces, all of us a few months older, I think. I need to get my photo updated. Somebody came up to me Friday night in shul, and he said, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem, welcome." He says, "Is there in Manchester, the Shabbos, is there a Wiesenfeld family simcha? You're all here." I said, "All here?" I said, "Who's here?" So he said, "Well, you're here," he said, "and you've got a brother on the poster giving a shiur Sunday morning." So my it might look a bit like me, but it's a bit out of date. So this is me, and only I'm here for Shabbos. Okay, Shaila. In my shrunk at home, I've got a number of sforim on Pirkei Avos, and they're on the shelf together with the Cholos Halvavos, with Mesilas Yeshurim, with the Shaarei Teshuva, with the sforim of Hashkofa, sforim of Musa, because Pirkei Avos is all about Hadrocha, Behanoga, Benodam Lachaveiroi, Benodam Lamokoim, Kinyone Atoiro, right? Those sort of things. And the Shaila is, how come that it's Mishnayos? How did it get into Shisha Sitra Mishnah Bichlal? Shisha Sitra Mishnah is halachas from beginning to end. It's not anhogas and advice and Eitz HaToiva. It's not that. So how did it become part of Mishnayos? And in Tim Teloima, that it's going to be part of Mishnayos, why in the middle of Nezikin? L'choira, you could say, Derech Eretz Kodma LaToiro, so maybe put it at the beginning of Zeroim before Mishnayos, that you should know that somebody has to be a clay kibbul in order to learn Torah, the chulei, all the musa, inyonim, etc. of Torah. But why should it be in the middle of Nezikin? That's the kasha. So, go back to a month ago, we were sitting Seder night, and we were learning the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and we're dashning a posuk. The posuk comes from Parshas Kisavoy. In the Parsha of Bikurim, a Yid arrives in the Beis HaMikdosh, and he tells the Rabbeinu Shalom, "I brought Bikurim," and he tells the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And he says, "Arami Yoive Dovi, Vayerad Mitzrayimo, Vayoga Shombim Seimaot, Vayorei Oisono HaMitzim Vayanunu." And the Mitzrayim did terrible things to us. Vayanunu. And they afflicted us, and then Baruch Hashem, we were released, and we came to Eretz Yisrael. If you have a look at in Parshas Chukas, which is coming up soon, in Parshas Chukas we have a parsha in which Moshe Rabbeinu was asking the king of Edom for permission to pass. And he told the king of Edom a little bit of history about Klal Yisrael. And he said, we were slaves in Eretz Yisrael, we were slaves in Mitzrayim, and we're on our way to Eretz Yisrael. We've been 40 years in the Midbar, and now we're just about there, but it's a long way around Edom. We would like to cut through and get to the to Eretz Yisrael by passing through Edom. Now, Barno Ba'atzecho, give us permission. And in the sob story that Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the king of Edom, he says that we were, Vayedu Avisenu Mitzrayimo, Vanei Shebe Mitzrayim Yomim Rabim, Vayoreu Lono Mitzrayim Vayavisenu. Same expression, Vayoreu Lono Mitzrayim, the Mitzrayim did terrible things to us. But it's not quite the same. Vayoreu, in Parshas Kisavoy, it says, Vayoreu Oisonu HaMitzrayim. And in Parshas Chukas, it says, Vayoreu Lonu HaMitzrayim. What's the difference between Vayoreu Oisonu and Vayoreu Lonu? If you look in Targum Onkelos, and you look in Targum Yonos and Ben Oziel, they make no difference. Vavishu Lono. They use the same expression twice. It said, Vayoreu Lono, Vayoreu Oisonu. They treated us badly, they did terrible things to us. But L'choira, again, it's not for me, Chas V'Shalom, to try and improve on the Unkelos or the Yonos and Ben Oziel, the Gemin Atana. But L'choira, if the Rabbeinu Shalom used two different expressions, he said Vayoreu Lonu here, and he said Vayoreu Oisonu there, then L'choira, there should be a difference between them. And also we need to know, why Vayoreu Lonu in Parshas Chukas, and Vayoreu Oisonu Dafka in Parshas Kisavoy? That's the difficulty that we have. or choral difficulty I have. And I saw, Tucker, that I saw this year actually, that in the Masifta Hagodah Shel Pesach, he brings down the kasher from somebody, and he brings down an answer which is not my answer. He brings down an answer to suggest by Yorei Oisonu, he says that the first stage in state anti-Semitism, the first stage that you get when a government wants to discriminate against the Jews, is that they say that the Jews are not loyal to the country, right? They're not on our side, right? Homon ischachma loy pen yerbe, v'hoyo ki sikreno milchomo, if there'll be a milchomo, v'noisav kamu al soinenu, they'll become spies, they'll be on the other side. They're not loyal to this country. Norman Tebbit had this, Norman Tebbit was a government minister for Margaret Thatcher, and he had this test, and he said, all these Muslims with British passports who live in Bradford and they live in Birmingham, he says, when England plays Pakistan at cricket, which side do they support? That was his test. What? Oh, that could be. That's a cricket expert. But he said, he claimed the first thing, they're not loyal. Yeah? So that's by Yoreyu Oisonu. They said we are bad. That's his pshat there. I want to try and offer you another pshat. I want to give you three hakdomas, and Baruch Hashem, nothing complicated, they're all Sipurim. First one is, some of you may have heard of Reb Chaskel Besser, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. He is the Shvei of Dudi Rosenberg, and a big Askan in the Aguda in America. And a case came to him once. A man came to the Aguda Sisrael Community Services in America, and he said, I've received a summons from the court in New York. They want $30,000. They want me to pay $30,000. Somebody is suing me. Who's suing him? The German government is suing him for $30,000. Why? Because he made an application. He himself was Nebuch, a refugee who came to America with a shirt on his back. He'd lost his entire mishpocha in Europe during the war. He'd suffered terribly in the camps. He came as a shivrei kelim, living in a tenement in the Lower East Side. No parnosa, no family, no hope. A miserable sort of person, but he made an application to the German government for Wiedergutmachung, for compensation. And it seems like he falsified in the application form. He wrote things that weren't true. He wrote things that weren't true about what he'd lost in Europe. He wrote things that weren't true about how many dependents he's got in America. They awarded him a certain amount of money. And then they found out that they'd given him too much money, that he wasn't, he didn't qualify for as much money as they were paying him. And they sent him a summons that they want to be repaid all the money that they'd overpaid him over a period in compensation that he didn't deserve. And he comes to the Aguda and he says, you know, I'm desperate. He said, I haven't got $30,000. He says, the money that I received, I paid. And the person who was dealing with it said, yes, but did you actually falsify the documents? I mean, are you guilty as charged? And he said, yes, but what shall I do? He said, I don't want to go to prison. The person who was dealing with it in their community department there didn't know what to do, and he passed the case to Reb Chaskel Besser. Reb Chaskel Besser made an appointment in the German consulate in New York, and he made an appointment to speak to the person who issued the summons. And he sat down with this person, and he said to him, tell me, he says, you've issued a summons against this person, what do you know about him? And the German says, all I know about him is that he's a thief. He's a gunner. That I know about him. I don't need to know any more. So he said, give me 5 minutes, I just want to tell you something. So he said to him like this, he said, this person, he said, at the beginning of the war, he was an innocent yeshiva bocher. He'd been to cheder, then he went to yeshiva. He'd never told a lie in his life. He'd never stolen anything in his life. He'd never swindled anybody. Mamash atomim, a baal midas, somebody who got on with everybody, and chas v'shalom, never done any harm to anyone. He said, but then you herded him together with Klal Yisrael into a ghetto, and there was no food, and there were illnesses, and the situation was desperate, and there was overcrowding. And the food that was available wasn't enough. And he discovered that the only way to survive was to go under the tunnels, to go through the sewers, and to go outside the ghetto, which was illegal, and then to steal from fields, and to steal from barns, and to steal from wherever they could, etc. He became very good at it. he said. He survived because of all these things that he did. So then he got herded from the ghetto into a concentration camp. And whilst he was in the concentration camp, the rations weren't enough to survive on. And the only way you could survive was if you could steal, if you could borrow, not borrow, but steal, if you could tell lies, if you could tell, you know, he claimed that he was a cook, so he got a job in the kitchen, and when he was in the kitchen, he managed to steal here and steal there, etc., etc. He said, this man was an innocent person who would never, ever have stolen, never have told a lie, never have done anything, he said. But because you placed him into desperate situations in the ghetto and in the camps, he learned to steal, he learned to cheat, he learned to tell lies, he learned to smuggle. He became a crook. But why did he become a crook? Because you taught him that. He's a Talmid Muvak of you. He said, he's a star pupil. He did exactly what you made him do. You put him into that position, you made him desperate, and that's why he became what he became. And when he came to New York, and he was again desperate, and he had no money, and he didn't know how to survive, then he said, oh, I'm going to use the lessons that I learned from my German masters. He said, and so he cheated. He had no other way of surviving, and this is what he learned from you. So he said, you can't find him guilty for doing the things that you taught him. He said, and if you take him to court, he said, I will be there with the press, he said, with the journalists. He said, and I will give this speech to the judge, and I will explain to the judge what happened and why he did what he did. And yeah, in the end, they were masking. Another story that I heard. Again, a similar sort of person. Arachmonas Anud Mutzal Meish, who was in New York, the Baba Varov Zachrein Levrocha, Rav Shloime, he started a Baba Vishtibel in the Lower East Side. But immediately after the war, again, it was Shvacha Minyan, and the people who were there were Shvacha people, and they'd all suffered, and they weren't so good. But he had one Balabos. He had one Balabos who was a good Bal Tefillah. And this Ramotcha was a good Bal Tefillah, and every Shabbos he used to daven Shachris. Every week, because they didn't have anybody. And he was a good Bal Tefillah. He knew the Nusach, and he sang nicely. So therefore, they mechabed him every week. And one week, he's not there. They're looking for him during Brochas, Psukim Zimra, and he's not there. So obviously, they had to send somebody else to the Omud. But the Bava Rav called over his son, Rav Nachtulcha, and he said, Chvaisi Shvi Rav Mothcha is not here this Shabbos. He said, but maybe he's not well. Maybe he's fallen. Maybe something has happened to him. So I want you to go around to his apartment and check out, make sure that he's okay. So I'm told you, okay, fine. So he said, yes, in Midden Davenen. And the Rav said, yes. So maybe he's lying on the floor, verweist. So Rav Nachtulcha goes out in order to, and he heads towards the apartment of this Ramotcha. And on the way, he sees on a bench on the street that Ramotcha is sitting there. And he's reading a newspaper. And he's smoking on Shabbos. And he got like, it shook him up. And he was very, very shocked. And he turned around, he was embarrassed, he didn't want the Ramotcha should even spot him. He turned around straight away, and he ran back to shul, and he stood at the back because he didn't want his father to call him. But his father looked for him, and he called him over. He said, Nu, Biskevein? And? You know, so he said, well, I met him. Yeah, and? Tati, he says, he's okay. Nu, was is a Nishki Kimmen? So he said, he's sitting on the bench and lays the Zeitung, he's reading a newspaper. Yeah? So his father said, Nicht gefährlich, sagt er. Aber Tati says, er reichet, he's smoking. And his father looked at him with an angry face and he said to him, he says, Nachtulcha, sagt er, reichet? The Deutschen reichen. The Germans are smoking. He's not smoking, they're smoking. They made him into who he is. They made him into what he is now. He said, they're responsible. I want to add one more masa, and then we'll get back to our pshat, if you like. One more masa is, many of you may have heard of Elie Wiesel. Elie Wiesel was a Hasidish Bocher from Siget, Avizhnitsa, and he was sent to the camps together with the whole of Hungarian Jewry, And he ended up, I think, I can't remember whether it was Buchenwald or Bergen-Belsen, one of those. Afterwards, he wrote about he became a professor in the Sorbonne, and he, after the war, and he became very famous. He won the Nobel Peace Prize, and he became an advocate. He was one of the first people to write in public and to speak and to lecture about the Holocaust. And he was interviewed once, and they asked him a question, and they said to him, what was the lowest moment in the time that you spent in the camps? What was the worst moment that you can remember in the time that you spent in the concentration camps? And he said like this. He said, I was deported to the concentration camp together with my father. He said, we were together, Baruch Hashem, which was good for me and good for him. He said, they made us work. He said, every day we had to go to a quarry which was like 2 miles or 2 kilometers away from the camp, and they marched us on the run. Now they were there with their guns and with their truncheons to beat us and with the dogs to make sure. And when we got there, we worked a 12-hour shift of back-breaking labour. And then they marched us back on the run all the way. So by the time we got back to the camp, we were all smench. He said, and then they gave us supper. What's the grain supper? The supper was a bowl of soup, that they called it, which was gruel or something. He said, we'd been dreaming of this bowl of soup all day long. My father, Zichron Levracha, told me, he said, if you think, my father was in Siberia, he said, if you think that people who are in concentration camps or in labor camps get used to being hungry, you know, we think their stomach shrinks and therefore they get accustomed to it. He said, it's not true. He says, from the morning until the evening, all you think about is, what am I going to eat? I'm hungry. So you think about that constantly, and it never leaves you, that feeling. He said, and we finally got back to the camp, and we got this bowl of soup and a hunk of bread. And everybody wolfed down the soup straight away. Everybody ate the soup immediately. He said, and everybody had some bread. But some people couldn't control themselves, and they ate all the bread in one go. And some people broke it in half, and they ate some of it now, and they knew they're going to be hungry later on, and they kept a piece for later. He said, and my father and I, every day, we used to keep half the bread for later on. So one day, he said, after we'd eaten, we are marched back to the barracks from the area where we were eating, and my father had had a really, really bad day. You know, he was much older than me, he wasn't as well, and he was suffering. And that day, he was stumbling, he was wheezing, he was coughing, he was struggling to breathe. And he wanted to drop on the way to the work and on the way back. And I pushed him and I said, Tati, you can't, you have to keep going. And I forced him to keep going. And now, after the day, and we were heading back to the barracks, he said, Kenishme. And he was like struggling to breathe and struggling to walk. And I thought to myself, this is the end. And I thought to myself, that's great. Isn't it wonderful? I'm going to get another piece of bread. He said, I willed my father to die in order that I could get another piece of bread. He said, to me, that was the lowest moment in the period that I spent in the concentration camps. Vayoreu oisonu hamitzrim. Yeah, vayoreu lonu hamitzrim. Rashi says in Parshas Chukas, Rashi Vayorei Lon HaMitzrim is talking about the things that the Goyim, that the Mitzrim did to us. So Valnu, Rashi says, yeah, Vayorei Lon Poshet, translation, Vayorei Lon HaMitzrim. And with that, the other Mephoshim seem to be happy. Nobody says anything else. Vayorei Oisonu HaMitzrim, which it says in Parshas Kisovoi. There, the Orach Chaim says something. The Orach Chaim, he didn't say anything in Parshas Chukas, but in Parshas Kisovoi, the Orach Chaim says, Vayorei oisonu pirish, osu oisonu roim keboison. They made us into bad people. The Germans made the Yidden into bad people because of desperate situations, because they had no choice, maybe. But they made them into bad people. Yidden did things during the war which they wouldn't have contemplated. Before the war, people did chesed, oba chayecho koidmin. During the war, it's not chayecho koidmin, it's me only. I worry for myself, I can't worry for someone else. And unfortunately, that's what happens in these desperate, terrible situations. A person becomes, they change the character of a youth. And that's what they want to do. They want to do that, and they actually do that by force of situation. So from Rachmonim, we become Achzorim. It happens. From Baishonim, we become Azusponim. We have to be arrogant in order to stand in front of a German officer and to tell lies, to lie through your teeth. You need to be an Azusponim. And from Goyim Lechasodim, we became Kamtsonim, every man for himself. And a Machir Etoiv, you become Machish Etoiv. It's a terrible situation, but that's a fact. That's what happens in these desperate situations. So, in Parshas Chukas, Moshe Rabbeinu is sending a message to Melech Edoim, to the king of Edoim. If he's sending a message to Melech Edoim, he's a goy, and he's saying a sob story. I'm telling you what happened to us in Mitzrayim. They treated us badly. They beat us. They enslaved us. They made us build buildings that collapsed. They buried children inside the walls. Terrible things that happened to us. Rashi says they did terrible things to us. When a person stands in front of the Rabbeinu Shloilom, a Yid comes to the Beis HaMikdosh, and he's standing in the Mokum Kedusha, and he's speaking to the Rabbeinu Shloilom, then he speaks, he's not speaking about Vayoreu Lonu, about the things that the Mitzrim did to us. He's talking about Vayoreu Esonu. They tried to ruin our character. They tried to spoil the Tzura of a Yid, to make him Os Yid, the Eidelkeit, and the Midas that a Yid ought to have. He said, the person stands there in front of the Rabbeinu Shlom, he says, they tried to ruin our Ruchnius. They tried to ruin our character. They tried to make us into Goyim like them. He says that's why it says maybe Vayoreu Oisonu Hamitzrim there in Parshas Kosovoi when he's standing in the Beis Hamikdash. Mashenke Vayoreu Lonu is in Parshas Chukas when you're talking to the goy. So now let's come back to our original kasha. Yeah? How did Pirkei Avos end up in Peseder Nezikin? I think now maybe I haven't seen the question asked. I haven't seen the question answered. And maybe you will agree with it, maybe you won't agree with it, but I'm going to offer you a suggestion. The Mishnah was written, Mishnayos was written, in the period of the Tanoim, entirely during Roman oppression. Right? The last 70, 80 years of the Bayit Sheni was during Roman oppression, and then they destroyed the Beis HaMikdosh, the second Beis HaMikdosh was destroyed by the Romans. And then they occupied Eretz Yisrael for the next 200 to 300 years. And the tzoros that they imposed on Klal Yisrael were unbelievable. The cruelty, the barbarity, right? There were public hangings. There were public floggings. Yidden were taken as slaves and sent away in order to be thrown to the lions and to the bears for the entertainment of the Romans. Have to fight with gladiators. And people disappeared from home all the time. And there were public punishments. And any child that was born in the period of the Tanoim would have grown up under the rule and the oppression of the Romans for their entire lifetime. The entire lifetime of all the Tanoim was under the terrible yoke of the Roman oppression and the terrible atrocities and the terrible things that were happening in front of their very eyes. People were arrested, people were killed, entire cities, entire towns were destroyed. Especially then you had the revolution of Bar Kokhba, they destroyed up to 200 towns. It was a terrible period for Klal Yisrael, and any child that was growing up, and any human being that was existing, a Yid, who was existing during the period of the Tanoim, lived in a terrible period, in a period of oppression, in a period of brutality, in a period of discrimination, a period which was in incredible barbarity. And it was possible then that when you live in that situation, that people's characters change, that people will become hard, people would become selfish. And all the other things that we described before, the arachmonim and arbashonim and argoim lechasodim, when they live in such situations, when they see such cruelty and barbarity around them, and they don't see ever, these people never knew, Klal Yisrael, never knew for generation after generation after generation, for 300 years during the period of the Tanoim, they never knew freedom. They never knew what it was to be free to do Avodas Hashem. They never knew what it was free to learn Torah. They never knew what it was free to be free. Nothing. All they knew was oppression, slavery, and terrible atrocities that were carried out to Klal Yisrael. And the Chazal, who were at that time Tanoim, who were composing the Mishnah, it was Mishnayos that everybody had to learn. Mishnah was Torah Shebaal Peh, which every child and every human being and every adult knew from the beginning of Zeroim till the end of Taras. Midon Vad Be'esheva, everybody learnt Mishnayos. That was Torah Shebaal Peh. And Chazal were worried that we'll be learning this Torah Shebaal Peh, but our Midas are going to be affected. We're not going to be the kind Goyim Lechasodim, the Baishonim, the Rachmonim. These Midas that we have are going to be lost. So therefore they decided we have to make a Mishnayos, we have to make a Mishnah, a Chelik of Shishasir Mishnah should be the Halichos and the Halochos and the Midos and the Benodom Lachaveroi and Benodom Lamokoim, Kinyone Atoiro. These things have to be an essential part of Shisha Sidra Mishnah, so that every person who lived during that period should know it and should retain and maintain their Yiddish Tzura, their Yiddish character, their Yiddish personality, what Klal Yisrael wanted. And Dafke in Nezikin, because Nezikin deals with all sorts of things that people do to each other, Choyvel and Mazik, and killing, and then you've got also you've got Malchus, and you've got Skila, Strefa, Herik, Chenek. All these things appear in Nezikin. And to somebody who is hard, to somebody who is suffering, to somebody who never knew a life of freedom, who never knew a life in which a Yid is allowed to practice his religion freely, such a person is in danger when he's learning Nezikin that, you know, he's going to look at it mitagoyisha oig with a different surah. Therefore, Chazal, maybe, a suggestion, maybe Chazal, in that situation, they wrote Pirkei Avos, Mamorim of the Tanoim, Mishnayos equal to all the other Mishnayos that everybody else had to learn, Mitchil Avad Sof, and they put it Dafka into the Mishnayos so that everybody would learn it, and everybody would know, even though we live in terrible situation and in terrible circumstances, but we know Vusis is Zayin Ayid, and what are the Midas that we ought to have, which are the Anogas and Hashkofas that we ought to have, and they put it Dafke into Seder Nezikin, which is the Chelek where we deal with where the Bein Odom L'Chaveiro is not. So Baruch Hashem, B'li Ha'Nora, we live in a situation, although we've got, we're living in a situation of rising anti-Semitism, but Baruch Hashem, we're able to practice our religion freely, Baruch Hashem, and we don't have these terrible state-organized tzoras, and therefore we have to be grateful. And when we learn Pirkei Avos, we have to remember that it wasn't always like that. It wasn't always like that in the time of the Mitzrim. It wasn't always like that in the time of the Romans. It wasn't always like that in the time of the Germans. Yeah, and other situations in between throughout history, when Shloyecho Bilvad Omad Aleinu L'Chaloseinu, not only L'Chaloseinu physically, but L'Chaloseinu mentally. And that we have to be grateful, Baruch Hashem, we live in a Malchus Shel Chesed, and that we should appreciate the opportunities that we have. Yeah.